Welcome to the Do Zone, where entrepreneurs go to get things done. I'm your host, Josh Thomas. You can find me on all social media at JT Literally. Each week, I bring on experts from a variety of backgrounds to share their secrets on how to optimize performance so you can take massive action and crush your goals. Speaking of optimizing performance, we now have trained AI sales and support agents ready to help you close more deals, reduce your labor costs, and free up your time for higher value tasks. To learn more, you can go to anabots.ai. Once again, that's anabots.ai. Today's guest is Jeremy Parker. And Jeremy graduated from the Boston University in 2007, where he majored in film production. And during his junior year, when his feature-length documentary secured the Audience Award at the 2006 Vail Film Festival, currently serving as this co-founder and CEO of swag.com, acquired by Custom Inc. in November 2021, Jeremy has positioned the company as the premier destination for businesses looking to purchase and distribute quality promotional products. Swag.com boasts an extensive clientele, including major players like Facebook, Google, Amazon, Apple, Netflix, Spotify, and TikTok. Jeremy, welcome to the Do Zone. Tell us something you believe is the key to getting stuff done that most people wouldn't think of.
Thank you so much for being here. Key to getting things done that you wouldn't think of. I think from my experience, it's just getting started. Really trying to learn from your clients and try to build the right thing for them. And I'll tell you from my experience, and I've had some success and some failures over the years, and all the failures really kind of boil down to, not necessarily, maybe even having a little bit too much ego with it, but building something that I thought was the right solution and not necessarily learning from the customers on what they actually needed. Right before I built Swag, I was building this social media company called Vouch. And for the first year of the business, we didn't launch anything. We just built. And I just built what I thought was the right solution for the audience. And then a year later, I ended up launching the first version of the platform. And I realized all the things that I lost sleep over, the things that I thought were the really most important things, the customers didn't even care about. It was things I didn't even think about. Those were the things that the customers wanted. And I realized at that moment, I just wasted a year of my life. And it put the business in a really difficult spot, right? You got to kind of maximize all the time you have to try to get product market fit. And with Swag, I took this completely different perspective. And I said, I have an idea of what's going to work, but I don't really know. I'm going to start knocking on doors from day one and trying to learn from customers. Who is the right customer? What are they looking for? Why would they buy from me and not from my competitor? And really try to understand what I was building before I built it. So I would say the key insight is just start and speak to as many people as possible to really ultimately learn the right thing to build.
Get out of my head, man. What are you like? That's exactly what I did myself. I spent an entire year building a business that nobody wanted, and I never bothered to ask around and find out. And it sucks, dude. Like, you burn cash, you burn relationships, you burn friends, you burn reputation, and for what? Pride,
For nothing.
ego.
It's
Yeah,
ego.
for
It's all ego.
yeah.
So I would say that. I would say another thing that I, as my a younger entrepreneur self, used to do all the time was try to get validations from outside validations that are not necessarily going to benefit you in any way. Being an entrepreneur is a super lonely sport. Even if you have a co-founder, at the end of the day, friends are going to think, you don't have a real job. And that's just the truth of it. Until you're successful, until you kind of prove that you do, until you prove that things are working, everyone thinks of it as more of like a side project. So a common trap that I found myself in, I've seen other friends and other entrepreneurs get into, is you want that third party validation. You want that validation from whether it's a VC or an investor to kind of give you that security and that validation that they're buying in, or press. How many articles do you see all over the place? People have that beautiful, rock and roll band image on Techstars. It's a way to give yourself some confidence to show everyone else, oh, look, I'm making it. I think for me with swag.com, we didn't really focus on any of that stuff. It was really about building the business, heads down, learning what to build, based on learning from customers. So like when we built stuff, we knew it was actually going to work because we got so much great feedback from our clients. And it allowed swag.com to be the fastest growing company in our industry. 2016, we launched the business. Yeah, what were you saying?
I'm curious, Jeremy, about that process. So First of all, I love that you led with, I built a company and I didn't ask. And it was, you didn't say how it ended up, and I'm not going to ask, but you learned an important lesson. And when you built another company, you flipped it around. And I'm
Totally.
curious for those of us who are out there and we're wanting to launch a new company and we're wanting to start a new brand or we're wanting to be successful with that. What are some of the steps that we could take to get some of that feedback, to get some of that, like, hey, here's what we're thinking. What do you guys want? What are some of the steps that somebody might take to be able to replicate that process?
Sure thing. Yeah, with swag.com, I had this mindset that I was going to learn from day one. I'm not wasting any more time. And what happened with the previous business, we spent 3 years and it ultimately failed, right? So you're kind of at the starting ground up. And yeah, with swag.com, I wanted to really understand the process and what I was building. So how do you do that? How we went about doing it is we went on LinkedIn and we reached out to every potential buyer of swag that we thought. So like you go to LinkedIn and my initial assumption, and this was a key insight, was I'm going to go after the marketing teams, right? Because we want to sell to businesses, but who at the business are we going to sell to? So our initial idea was let's sell to the marketing teams. Why? Because the marketing teams we thought have the biggest budget. You know, it could be a 10-person team, but they could be buying thousands of dollars of swag for trade shows, for events, for giveaways to send to their best customers, etc. And I went on LinkedIn. I would look up every person that worked at a startup that between 100 employees and 200 employees that was on the marketing department. Okay, and we started reaching out, cold reaching out, and we did that, and as well as you know, literally going to random offices and knocking on doors and trying to ask questions. And frankly, when you're in front of them, it's hard for them to say no. It's like you knock on somebody's door at a WeWork, and you say, "Who buys swag? Who's the marketing person?" They're going to give you 10 minutes, whether they want to buy from you ultimately, or they're going to give you feedback, or they're it doesn't really matter. Get comfortable being uncomfortable, as they say. But what I realized within the first 3 months of talking to all these marketing managers, I realized that everyone's going after the marketing team. That was like everyone's going after it. How could our new brand that had a coming soon landing page with no clients, how are we going to cut through the noise and win when everyone's going after the same exact buyer? And what I realized is that a different buyer segmentation in the company was really the target that we should be going after, the office manager, right? The office manager is buying swag for internal purposes. They're buying swag for their 10-person team, for their 50-person team. The marketing team, the sales team, this office, that office, they're all going to get the swag because the office manager is the one who's doing the purchasing. But no one's going after the office manager because it's not sexy. It's not big budgets, right? But it was our way of cutting through the noise and kind of like Trojan horsing into the company, right? You're getting into the company through the office manager. And then what happens when the office manager buys for all the different departments and every t-shirt says swag.com and in your label, all the other departments already have the buy-in from the company that they're buying from swag. They see the quality in real time and they become customers. So it was our way to kind of go around the system. Now, early days, if I didn't talk to customers, if I didn't have those hundreds of literally hundreds of conversations with marketing managers, I would have never learned that. So I think it really from the get-go, we survived and thrived because we ultimately were going after the right audience. Now, over the course of the years, people have taken that strategy. They've seen what we've been doing and it, but at that point, no one was talking to office managers, so it was a very unique way to get in.
Yeah, and so what I hear here is you always have to start with something. You have a hypothesis. My hypothesis is the marketing department is the place to go. And we start talking to the marketing department, and it's a red ocean. And somebody leads you into the idea that, oh, actually, it's the office manager. And you built an entire business off of just getting one piece of intel that turns you one degree to the right or to the left. And opens up the floodgates to the blue ocean of opportunity.
That's exactly right. And now, obviously, I mean, we work with clients like Amazon, and we have the office manager buying from us, and the marketing team, and the sales team, and the London office, and New York office. Ultimately, you could expand to everybody, and we have everybody. But when you're starting out, you have to kind of cut through the noise. You have to figure out exactly who the right audience is, what makes you different than your competitors, and how do you kind of differentiate yourself? So we ultimately were talking to hundreds of office managers at that when we discovered that, and we ultimately started to build them the exact right platform and solution for their needs. As we've grown, we've started to expand features for marketing teams and sales teams. But in the beginning, every single thing that we built was really designed to help the office manager shine.
And what have you found in keep this as kind of general and applicable as possible for a wide audience, but one thing that you the questions you were asking are, well, why would somebody use us versus somebody else? You know, why would they go with us at all? What were some of the things as you started talking to the office managers that you were able to kind of dial in and really deliver the best possible product for your audience?
It's actually kind of interesting. So the office manager we discovered at the time was a very millennial. I mean, now it's quote unquote Gen Z, but they were like 22, 23-year-old. What's the most important thing to a 23-year-old? Just put yourself in the mind of a 23-year-old. They just graduated college. It might be their first job. They're given this responsibility to buy swag for the office, get the snack food, get the coffee, like really try to understand who this buyer is. And we learned about this buyer.
I would my hypothesis for this, and I'm excited to be proven right or wrong on this, but my hypothesis is some sort of social status recognition for a job well done. Attaboy, great job.
That is definitely part of it. And another part of it is they are fearful. They're nervous. It's their first job. They're given a budget of $10,000. They don't want to screw it up. That's it. Their main motivation is not to look bad. Do they care about saving the company money? To a degree. That's not their priority. Their main priority is they don't want to buy something that ends up in the trash, because who's the person that's going to get the blame for it? Who's going to be the person everyone points to? That's what they were nervous about. So that goes on a lot of factors of what you have to do then. If you know that's the mentality of somebody who's nervous, how do you solve that? Well, they always say that famous line, you can never get fired for buying from Dell. So we had to really go and own that brand of swag.com and be this like confidence builder. And the website had to look immaculate and amazing. And we had to get social proof from all these different big name brands. If Facebook and WeWork and Google and Amazon uses swag.com, how could we be blamed if we're going to use swag.com? So all of these things had to go into the packaging of who we are. All the products on our site, we never offered stuff that would end up in the trash. Everything on our site has been curated and vetted and tested by our team. Honestly, there's so much crap out there that ends up in the trash. We don't offer it on our site. We are the curated solution. There's a lot of people out there, a lot of companies out there that offer 1,000 mugs. We offer the top 15 mugs. Why? Because we ordered all those thousands of mugs into our office and we tested and we saw what the best quality print is, what's the best, like everything. We were so like precise on the products that we offer. Right. So that's like, that was our focus. It's not offering the cheapest options. It's not offering stuff that, you know, is 99 cents or 50 cents for. We're going to offer inexpensive items, but they have to be the highest quality of those inexpensive items. And we're going to offer products that are premium items, that are more brand name items, that are differentiated and make the office manager stand out. So that was kind of the hypothesis that we've learned. And it really allowed us to make all of our decisions. Like when we decided, are we going to build this or build that? Or is this product going to work for us? Or is that everything went back to the customer. Who is the customer? What's their main motivation? And how do we build them the right solution for them?
Yeah, smart. And so I'm just curious, kind of going back to you a little bit and where you came from. I know that you studied film in college. How do you go from making movies to making mugs?
Yeah, Liz, I'll try to give it the quickest version of it because it is a kind of a weird path. I was a documentary filmmaker in college. When I was a junior in college, my documentary, feature-length documentary, won the Vail Film Festival. So I was in Vail, Colorado, one of the top film festivals in the country. And there was this quote-unquote celebrity brunch after the film festival, like the next day. And I walk into this and half the room were main celebrities that everyone's heard of and half the room were these struggling artists. And I asked myself two questions. Number one, do I love what I'm doing? And number two, am I that good at it? And honestly, even though I just came off this win of a high, I realized the answer was no to both. I didn't really fully love being a filmmaker. I saw a lot of films at the festival that people were way better than me. And I felt like I just wanted to change up my career. And I was a junior in college. I still had a year to go with film school. So I finished film school. And after film school, I didn't know what I wanted to do. I had no business experience whatsoever. So I thought, why don't I just start a company? I didn't know what type of company, but just start anything. And I would learn what I was good at, what I was bad at, what I enjoyed, et cetera. And I picked a t-shirt company because I thought it would teach me manufacturing and production and building an e-commerce site. This is pre-Shopify days, how to do PR and marketing and branding, all these different things. And we launched this high-end t-shirt company in 2007. Now, I'm sure your audience doesn't remember this, but 2007 was the recession, and we were selling $250, $300 t-shirts, and all the stores we would sell to went under or just stopped buying t-shirts. So I came up with this market-related pricing model at the time, kind of gimmicky, but I tied the prices of my t-shirts to the prices of the Dow Jones. And so for every 100 points the Dow dropped, they would get a discount on their t-shirt price. And this ultimately got picked up by a lot of blogs, Blog Maverick, Mark Cuban's blog, Ad Age, all these different things, ultimately led me to meet this guy, Elliot Pizer, who is the CEO of a company called MV Sport. And MV Sport is one of the largest players in the promotional product space. That's kind of how I got to the promotional product industry. He was mainly for collegiate apparel. You know, if you go to a University of Maryland bookstore, all those t-shirts, a lot of it's MV Sport, a lot of it's Nike and Adidas and Under Armour and brands you've heard of. MV Sport is a really large company that no one's heard of, type of thing. And I learned so much about the collegiate licensing division and how everything worked back then. What was interesting is at that time, all the buyers of promo was 45, 50-year-old office managers. And when I started Swag about 9 years ago, the buyer shifted. That was the key insight of why I started swag.com. It was like, this industry is just getting bigger and bigger and bigger, but it's still super fragmented, super broken, super old. And the buyer has shifted. The buyer is no longer that 45-year-old. So if the buyer, if that one thing shifts, like not doesn't everything have to shift. If one thing shifts in the industry, there's opportunity. And I felt like, well, what if I built the right platform for today's buyer? And then who is today's buyer? And then you kind of go on to, you know, dialing in and understanding it's the office manager. And obviously in between, I mentioned the app that failed. I spent 3 years on that app. I also had a success. I sold to a publicly traded company, a different company. When I was 25, we did a product placement in YouTube videos. So right now, every YouTube star has product placement sponsored by Coke or Instagram posts. But when I was 25 years old, this is 14 years ago, that didn't exist. I mean, this we were like a wild west. Like there was YouTube stars living in their parents' basement and getting more views than American Idol. And so our idea was, what if we partner up with these YouTube stars really early and got them deals with State Farm, Colgate, Verizon? So we were like this middleman agency for all these YouTube stars, ultimately signing on celebrities, major celebrities. I started buying rights to celebrities, Twitter and Facebook posts. That's a whole history, but basically had some success, had some failures. But at the end of the day, I always remembered and loved my time at MV Sport in the promo industry. And that was that key insight of things have shifted. Let me be that guy to revolutionize the industry. And we did with swag.com. We grew 100% every single year over 350,000 to 1.1 million to 3 million to 7 million to 15 million to 30 million. Every year we were growing over 100%. And in 2021, we got acquired by a company called Custom Inc., who's the largest player in the industry. So I'm still at Custom Inc. I was the CEO of swag.com up until December. And in December, I came to my boss, the founder and CEO of Custom Inc. And I said, I have this new idea that I would love to launch under Custom Inc. called Swag Space. And we just started building it. We launched it in January. And just as a quick, what Swag Space is, very simple. We have this amazing technology for swag.com, you know, allows Amazon and Google to buy swag. Our idea is simple. What if we allowed any of the other people who want to sell swag to easily sell swag through using our technology? So think of it as like a designer or a event planner that might want to sell swag to their clients, or a promo distributor. There's 22,000 people who sell swag for a business, their mom and pop shops. They have no technology, no resources. What if they, in seconds and for free, could upload their logo, their brand colors, and instantly have the best e-commerce experience in the industry to sell swag to their clients? And when their clients buy through the e-commerce site, just like a Shopify, it hits our backend and we also become the de facto supplier. So we remove all the friction. Literally anybody that wants to sell swag can now sell swag in seconds.
Love that. And we can buy it direct. We can buy a couple at a time, or we can send it directly to our customers and they can buy it whatever they want from there as well.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
So imagine you're a designer and you create a logo for somebody, and then that client takes that logo that you just created and goes to a different website to buy swag. Why don't they just buy it from petersdesignfactory.com? And we handle the website, the front facing, make it easy to buy, and also the production, the printing, the manufacturing, the consolidation, the distribution. We handle it all, and the designer is making 30% of every sale. This is a completely new way for people to make significant new revenue streams for themselves.
I love that. And so where can we go to learn more about, obviously, swag.com? And tell us, where can we go to learn about Swag Space and get signed up?
Yeah, very simple. Just go to swag.space. That's
swag.space.
No .com, nothing, just super short, swag.space.
Love it. I really enjoyed this. Thank you so much for sharing your journey and the questions that you ask and the insights that you found from just following the trail and letting it take you where it goes. And so this is Jeremy Parker. For those of you who want to learn more, you can go to swag.com to check out the website there. Or if you want to create your own storefront, do your own designs, you can go to swag.space. For those of you who are out there on your morning commute, sitting in traffic, or it's leg day or chest day at the gym, or maybe you're out there digging a hole in a field somewhere, snap a selfie, tag me at JT Literally. Show me what you do while you're in the do zone. And one more time, if you're looking to boost your sales, cut your costs, and free up your time for higher value tasks, get yourself an Anabot. You can learn more by going to anabots.ai. That's it for this episode. Let's get to work.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Do Zone podcast. If you're running a service-based business that's looking to grow this year, let's talk about how we can slingshot you into momentum with a quick injection of cash and sales. Our clients typically see results in as little as 7 days. To learn more about what we do, you could go to factor1.io. Once again, that's factor1.io. We'll see you next time.